You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And for the first time in a while, not really any football to discuss.
Yeah, I'm actually excited to take a break from football. It was a fun football season, but I was listening to it on sports radio this week, and it was just constant Seahawks talk, and I was like, there's nothing to talk about.
I don't think I blame them. I would be willing to talk about the Seahawks every week, you know, forever, basically. I mean,
well, fortunately,
at least until they're no longer the champions.
We won't this week. You would talk about them every week for another year.
Yeah.
But I had something that I wanted to bring up, and that is a little bit of parenting advice.
That's, I think, part of what this podcast is all about. And yeah. If anyone's qualified to give parenting advice, it's you.
I was saying ever since I have a baby, he is almost 2 years old, and I've said that, so here's a stipulation first. He cannot listen to children's music.
That's a hard line to take.
I feel like listening to children's music really stunts a person's growth mentally.
Do you think, like, it stunted your growth?
Probably. I would rule it out. So I was thinking that at the time period where he was able to listen to songs and repeat the words that were in those songs, that I had to stop listening to primarily rap music and start listening to primarily indie rock or electronic music, right?
Electronic, especially a good choice for this.
And I determined that this was the week that I had to start doing that.
What drove that decision?
Well, so we were in a snowstorm over the weekend.
We were.
And the baby, we were driving in a snowstorm over the weekend, and the baby was in the back seat, and he uttered a lot of F-bombs.
I mean, I think that was in reaction to there was maybe some of them being uttered by the adults in the car.
That's what I'm saying. He heard us yelling them, and then repeated those, and I was like, oh, wow.
So you're worried that he's going to start listening to the lyrics and songs and repeating them.
And as you know, there are only... He said them very clearly, too.
He's got great enunciation.
Yeah. His two favorite songs, really the only two songs that he likes, are Can't Hold Us by Macklemore, which he often just sings to himself, and I'm fine with, and Shabba Ranks by A$AP Ferg.
And see, that's a little problematic.
I've listened to the clean version on YouTube many times, so he's listened to that. He really only likes the Shabba Shabba Ranks chorus. And doesn't really care about the verses, but listening to them edited, it's like there aren't any verses.
Exactly.
So I determined today that I had to, when driving him to his grandparents' house where he stays for the day, listen to something from my phone. And so I was pulling out my phone and what music I had on there, because I don't really want to listen to the radio because I don't want to hear ads and things like that. And
that would really stunt his development.
These are the artists. It's pretty much the most recent album by these artists. So I have Beyonce, Chance the Rapper, Drake, which has a lot of swearing on it.
Yep.
Haim, James Blake, Kanye West, which is unlistenable for babies.
Oh, for sure.
La Luz, Mutual Benefit, Radiohead, and Rye. And so I settled on Haim as being the most baby-appropriate music.
Baby-friendly music.
And I started their album, and it has the hits right up front. And he seemed into it at first, and then we got to like the fourth song, and he started crying. And I was like, what's going on? And he said, more songs. And more songs, I thought that meant that he wanted to listen to more music. And then he started crying again when I turned the music up. And then he started crying again. And I was like, do you want a different song? And he was like, yes. Different song. So I switched over to the Rye album, which is really good. And the first song on that album, Open, and started playing that. And like 30 seconds in, he went, I like it, Dada.
Oh, nice.
I was like, I think this is an upgrade.
Okay.
Him preferring Rye over Haim. I really thought Haim would have been perfect baby music, but he was not into it.
I was thinking that could have been a marketing strategy for them. Good listening for babies.
It's like listening to the Cars or something.
It turns out that apparently that is not true. Babies reject it. 9 out of 10 Tristan's babies.
I don't actually have 10 babies. But so I thought that was nice. I'll keep you posted on the other music that he's interested in, because it's going to be nonstop indie rock now. And I've often thought that he's very interested in music, right? And not children's music. He often says, more songs, or I like songs. Just in general, I like songs.
It's a very, like, optimistic way of looking at the world. I like songs, too.
And I think that he could be a real, like, music prodigy. I mean, he already likes ASAP Ferg, 1 year old.
I mean, it's interesting that we have these things that we're very interested in. You music and sports, me sports, much more than music. And we have no ability at them whatsoever.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that we have no ability at sports.
Okay, it's very limited. I'm doing a piece later this week that imagines the talent distribution of every person in the world if they played in the NBA.
Yeah.
And I'm like way at the tail. I don't know. I guess that's not true. Every person in the world, we're probably solidly above average.
Most of the people in the world have never played basketball.
It really is true.
You're in like the 90th percentile of every person in the world.
That really makes me feel better about
probably
it.
Probably even higher. Most people in the world are in China.
That's true.
And many of them have not played basketball. Many people in the world are over 60 years old.
I probably have stamina on them.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point being that the things we're interested in, we're not necessarily good at doing. And I think that the next generation offers the ability for you to be the Todd Marinovich of music.
Yeah.
With your child.
I have no real interest in teaching him how to perform music, though. I just want to teach him to know about music from a really young age.
Okay.
That's really all I'm concerned with. I don't care if he plays music. I would much rather him be playing sports.
But he is far advanced in terms of his knowledge of this stuff. Like, you know, I couldn't have told you anything about sports until probably at least age 7 or 8.
I was thinking of that also, about why I need to listen to music when driving around with him versus listening to sports podcasts. Because he's going to know a lot about sports no matter what. He can't avoid it. You know? But if I'm listening to music nonstop, he could potentially avoid knowing a lot about music. Because there's always going to be sports on the TV that we're watching. He's going to know everything there is about football. But he could. I don't listen to music in the house that much.
Well, I think this is... we'll continue with these updates throughout his development.
But speaking of people who are good at a lot of things, I want to talk about Damian Lillard, the Blazers star, participating in All-Star Weekend and participating in so many different contests. This has to be the most of any player ever.
Yeah, it's a record. I think that previously Kenny Smith competed in both the three-point shootout and the slam dunk contest on the same night. And there's been guys who have done, you know, maybe an event on Saturday like the Skills Challenge and the Rookie Game and the All-Star Game. But he's combining both of those things and doing 5 events over the 3 days in New Orleans.
So he's doing the Rookie Sophomore Game, the Dunk Contest, the Three-Point Contest, the Skills Challenge, and then playing in the All-Star Game on Sunday.
He's going to be the busiest man in New Orleans, hands down.
Do you think that this means anything?
In what sense?
Well, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, like, okay, Damian Lillard was a rookie last year. He was good. He's playing on a team that's good but not on the mat, maybe. This is kind of the Damian Lillard coming out party.
I think very much so.
I want to be so present. I'm becoming a star this weekend.
I thought last year Paul George was the coming out star of All-Star Weekend, had a good performance, was in the game down the stretch, really held his own with other guys, and then now he's unquestionably in that class.
Was he in the All-Star game last year?
Yeah. So Lillard, I think, definitely has a potential. Like, yeah, you're right. The nation hasn't necessarily seen that much of the Blazers. They haven't been on national TV a ton. They've been on a fair amount, but not a ton. You know, he's up in Portland. He's often playing at 10 o'clock East Coast time. So yeah, I think this is a really big weekend for him in terms of exposure. But there's already a certain, like, street cred, so to speak, that the Blazers have, is best exemplified, I think, by the Black Portland mixtape. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in discussing that, the collective talked about how part of it was the spirit of the Blazers, whose logo is on that, and how they're this up-and-coming team that they kind of identify with.
That's really, and it's hard to identify with the Hawks in any way.
Oh. That's unless you love Macedonian players.
I was also thinking that the dunk contest, you're going to be there, right? At the dunk contest.
I will be.
It's like tailor-made for you.
How so?
Well, you've got Damian Lillard, who plays for the team that you cheer for. You've got Paul George, who is one of the best players in the NBA, and everybody likes him. He's also really good at dunking, but plays for the team that you used to work for.
That's true.
That you worked for when they drafted Paul George. You've got
I take full credit.
Yeah. And you basically drafted Paul George.
Exactly.
You've got Terrence Ross, who went to the college that you cheer for. And then John Wall, who's just exciting that he's in it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think the only way it could be more tailor-made for me is if there was a Sonics team and they had a participant in there. But yeah.
Yeah, that would be... I probably wouldn't be too concerned with the dunk contest if that happened.
I think you'd be more concerned with the dunk contest if that happened.
I name this time period that we're in these, like, early February through March, basically, the month of February, I've determined that it's the dog days of winter. I named it that last week. It's just like there's nothing really going on. Post-Super Bowl, pre-NCAA tournament, that's the dog days of winter. And
yeah.
Thinking you're going to get an NBA team really makes these 2 weeks much more palatable.
It does.
But I had a question for you. You were saying...
Especially because the Winter Olympics don't. Well, there will not be any Winter Olympic talk on today's podcast.
There just was some. You were saying that you thought Damian Lillard was a little bit overrated at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if we were selecting the All-Star rosters today, I wouldn't have Damian Lillard on my roster. I would have Goran Dragic and Mike Conley ahead of him as point guards in the Western Conference. Now, that was not the case when I actually did pick my rosters a few weeks ago, right before the coaches did. He's kind of slumped since then, and Dragic in particular has really taken off. But, you know, it's tough because on the one hand, there's people that don't think he's very good because he shoots a low percentage from the field and don't understand that that's because he shoots a ton of threes,
mm-hmm.
and therefore he's still an efficient shooter. But he's also... You know, the Blazers are probably seen as championship contenders more than they really legitimately are in terms of their underlying performance. And therefore, I think that the guys, you know, both Aldridge and Lillard have gotten maybe a little bit too much credit this year.
Really? That's really strange because you would have guessed that LaMarcus especially would have been underrated for most of his career.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the other factor is, again, what we talked about, the lack of exposure being in the Northwest and not being on national TV a lot. So somehow the pendulum has actually swung a little bit, I think, to the other side.
So I have a question for you. I was looking up comparing players from John Hollinger's PER, and I don't know how much credence you give to that stat, but I noted how good Isaiah Thomas is through PER and that he's a restricted free agent this summer. First off, what kind of contract do you think he's going to get?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I've thought a fair bit about, because you're right. And in terms of my warp stat, which is comparable to PER, he comes out very well. In fact, I think he's like right up there with those guys I just mentioned, Dragic and Conley, and ahead of Lillard among point guards in the Western Conference. But there was no All-Star talk about him. He's playing on a bad team, which is part of it. I think people are always going to be skeptical of him because of his height, and then he's a restricted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see him getting less than you'd think. I think probably at this point he has to get like at least $8 million a year, but I don't know if he's going to get more than 10, certainly.
Okay, so Isaiah Thomas's PR is 21.7, 23rd in the league, ahead of James Harden, Paul George, Kyrie Irving, John Wall, other all-stars, right? Damian Lillard's PR, 19.02, 43rd in the league. Would you trade those two players for each other?
Huh. I don't know. I mean, Lillard doesn't have a huge size advantage or defensive advantage. I'm not sure off the top of my head how much younger he
is,
if at all.
It's 2 years. Isaiah's 25 and Damian Lillard's 23.
Okay. So probably not. I also think that this is probably more of a fluke season for Isaiah than it is. I don't know if he's going to keep playing at this level because it's way better than he did the last couple of years.
You're not thinking of this as a breakout season for him?
It could be. I hope that it is. But I'd be a little skeptical of that.
Do you think it's because of where he was drafted?
Sure. I mean, I think it's the same factors that go into that that produce the skepticism, again, his height and, you know, in particular.
I was just looking at that, and I was really shocked. I mean, first off, how good DeMarcus Cousins is, and Isaiah Thomas in that stat, how the Kings have two excellent players. And I feel like Isaiah is getting no credit for it whatsoever.
Well, PER is heavily offensive-weighted, and the Kings have been very good offensively since they made the Rudy Gay trade and moved Isaiah into the starting lineup. And they cannot stop anyone at the defensive end. They are terrible defensively.
And you think it's because of Isaiah? Is he allowing too much penetration?
I think it's more because of Cousins than... And just an overall lack of team defensibility. I mean, Isaiah competes really hard at the defensive end.
I always thought he was an underrated defender in college.
I thought so, too. He really improved over the course of his career. I thought, really, when he had his matchups with Jerome Randall, when he was the player of the year at Cal, that really showed his potential defensively. And that's part of what convinced me he could be an NBA player. But, you know, it's still 5'9" is 5'9", and guys are always going to be able to see over him, and it's always going to be a limitation to that extent.
That's interesting. I'm interested to keep watching that also, to see if Isaiah stays this good through the entire season. And he just recently went into the starting lineup?
Yeah, it was early December. It's been a couple months now.
Okay. And then later tonight, you're driving down to Portland and seeing the Blazers and the Thunder.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. My first trip to Portland since December, actually, when I saw the Miami Heat beat the Blazers at the Moda Center. But I rarely miss an opportunity to see the Thunder come to town since their move. It's always good to catch up with some of the people that worked with the organization in Seattle. And, you know, there's still the occasional straggler fan in green and gold. It's not quite the caravan that it was the first couple times they came through, but always a fun time.
I was wondering, I don't know if I've talked about this. This is completely unrelated. It's mildly unrelated. I have flashcards that I made for the aforementioned baby of every NFL team. And there's a picture of their logo and then their nickname. And I was wondering what I should do when I inevitably make NBA flashcards for him.
No, yeah, you gotta include the Sonics.
I should include the Sonics?
Without question.
Should I also include the Thunder and just call them the Thunder?
Yeah.
Should I play it straight?
I mean, you know, he should be aware of their existence. Eventually, when he's old enough, he needs to understand what happened to create the Thunder.
What happened to create the Thunder?
The whole process. I assume just a good viewing of Sonic Skate and then maybe some conversations with
Once he turns three.
Yeah. He'll be ready for that.
I was curious about that. So you think I should include the Sonics in there and just have him know the Sonics as if they were an NBA team?
Yeah, I mean,
won't
you got to prepare him for
when he's playing NBA 2K or whatever? Or he'll just play with the 90 Sonics.
Exactly. You should definitely play with the 96 Sonics whenever possible.
Okay, so anyway, back to Oklahoma City. So you're seeing Kevin Durant.
He's very good at basketball. I have a piece today on Insider arguing that the Thunder is now the favorites to win the championship based on how they've played without Russell Westbrook and the fact that they're probably going to be the number one seed in the West. And, you know, Durant has really taken his game to another level. His scoring streak when he had 30 points in 12 consecutive games, he was doing it at a level of efficiency that was basically unmatched in modern NBA history among guys having streaks like that. And so you could argue that he and LeBron this year are having two of the greatest scoring seasons of all time.
Because they're doing it so much more efficiently than previous players have done?
Exactly. So there's basically a threshold. I'm going to write about this a little bit in the future, and there was a post on Deadspin a few weeks ago. A threshold where the combination of your true shooting percentage, which is your efficiency as a shooter, and then your usage, which is the percentage of plays you create for your team. So there's basically a threshold, like you can be more efficient, or you can use more plays, but you have historically have always stayed at this threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And Durant and LeBron this year have broken through the threshold and are beyond it. It's like if you graph it, they are outliers from everyone else in NBA history, even the best seasons.
Really?
And NBA history is a little bit strong because this is only going back to, I think, 77 when you could start calculating player possessions.
You think that they're having better than Jordan seasons this year?
Yes.
Really? Both Durant and LeBron?
Yes.
So this is basically...
His scores. They're not better overall. Jordan is still the best player in terms of all-encompassing contributions. But his scores right now, they are better than Michael Jordan.
That's crazy. Does it include Wilt era?
No. So it'd be only going back to the late 70s.
Okay. That's really interesting. And any other thoughts on this specific game?
I mean, like I said, it's always exciting. So when they're also two of the best teams in the conference, it really adds to that. Mm-hmm. And it's become a pretty good rivalry this season, I think. You know, there's still some lingering Portland-Seattle things. And, you know, they're two teams that were built similarly a few years ago. Now both have young talent and are kind of competing at a similar level in the Western Conference. So Portland beat Oklahoma City in Portland a couple months ago when I was there. And since then, they've played two games down in Oklahoma City. The Blazers won on New Year's Eve. And then in the second game, looked like they had a chance to pull the upset and go up 3-0 in the season series. But Durant went supernova in the fourth quarter and basically just single-handedly won that game for Oklahoma City.
And they played four games, right?
Yeah, so this will decide the season series. Probably won't come into play. Portland's four games back of them in the standings and probably likely to fall back a bit, but... Yeah.
Before this current run, though, they were right neck and neck for that first seed.
Yeah, I mean, Portland's only 5-5 in the last 10 games. Oklahoma City has gone 11-2 in the last 13. So they've kind of pulled away from everyone else in the Western Conference. They're going to probably be, almost certainly be the number one seed. But you could still see this as a potential second round matchup in the playoffs because Portland's probably going to slot into the 4-5 seeds eventually.
That would be the most exciting playoff matchup in so long.
I would be pretty excited about that.
Oh my God. Who do you find yourself cheering when you're at the games?
No.
Not mentally, like, do you cheer in your head?
Not really.
You just watch it straight?
Yeah.
Do you care who wins?
A little, maybe. I don't know.
A little, mildly. It's so strange to me that you can't not cheer against Oklahoma. Especially when the Blazers are playing them.
I mean, the one thing that, like, I have to come to terms with mentally is putting them as the favorites. Like, the possibility that I am in Oklahoma City and watching them hand the championship trophy, watching Adam Silver now hand the championship trophy to Clay Bennett, that would be tough to take.
David Stern would come back just to hand it to
him. Yeah, he would. That would be
nice. He'd come out of retirement.
But now I have a plan, which is I can just log onto my laptop and put on repeat the Super Bowl post-game celebration and... Bam, I'm okay with it.
You'll hold that up. The celebration will be going on in front of you, but you'll hold up the Super Bowl celebration.
So it's good that I have that memory now to really carry me through what could be a tough stretch. I mean, Durant is now arguably the best player of the league. There's a conversation about whether he and LeBron is the best player
of the
league.
I mean, looking at this
PR. And the fact that you could be doing this 20 minutes from our house is... pretty staggering.
He's significantly better by PR. Four more wins added for Durant than LeBron this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, LeBron is basically coasting through the regular season. He denied it when he talked to Mike Pridium calling Tom Haberstroh. But when you look at the numbers, it's obvious that...
Well, you can't say that you're coasting.
No. It's obvious he's taken a different strategy, and especially he's conserved some energy at defense, which he should do. The regular season really doesn't matter to Miami. It's all about the playoffs. Like, they're going to be the second seed. We know that. And it's pretty much just killing time until they face the Pacers in the conference finals.
But you're leaving from Portland, right, to go on a long extended trip for the next
week. I'm coming back.
Oh, you're flying from here?
Yeah. So Wednesday I'll be flying to Boston and catching Celtics Spurs that night and heading down to Bristol for a day. And then on Thursday evening heading to New Orleans for All-Star Weekend. So a lot of NBA basketball this week in various different states. In time zones.
Is it going to be crazy at All-Star?
Oh, yeah. So the only other All-Star weekend I've gone to was 2008 when it was also in New Orleans.
And you've never been with ESPN before?
No.
Does this mean that you're going to get access and invited to ESPN parties?
I don't think there are ESPN All-Star parties. I know there's like a Super Bowl party. If there is, I have not been invited. I'm not anticipating a lot of party going, but...
I was wondering if our listeners are interested in hearing your antics from All-Star.
I mean, I think there'll be a full recap next week.
A recap? You don't think there are going to be enough antics that you're going to have to do it from New Orleans?
I don't think so.
Are you going to be invited to parties that are hosted by Charles Barkley?
Probably not.
But those do happen, you're just not going to be at them.
Yeah. Yeah, like I remember, I don't know, I was in the same hotel as one of the parties in 2008. I feel like I saw some signs for it, but... Yeah.
And it said no comments allowed.
I think there's pretty heavy security at them.
Well, that's unfortunate that you're not going to be going to them. But I'm curious to hear your recap. You're going to be back next week?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious to hear your recap, and I really want there to be antics.
I mean, if there are antics, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be shareable on the air.
Oh, well. What happens at All-Star stays at All-Star?
But my main memory of All-Star 2008 was Saturday night. I briefly ventured out onto Bourbon Street. Mm-hmm. Looking for some people, and it was just, like, you could not go anywhere. It was wall-to-wall humanity. It was basically, like, the Seahawks parade, you know, that along 4th Avenue, along the parade route, was the entirety of Bourbon Street.
And people can legally drink on the streets there?
They can.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. I gotta go there.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to go there during All-Star Weekend, but I want to go to New Orleans during some notable weekend.
Apparently they have some event coming up soon. Mardi Gras.
And then do you want to close by talking about Husky basketball, if we have to?
So not positive returns from Husky basketball last week. They actually played a pretty good half at Utah on Wednesday, were pretty close to even at halftime, and then Utah pulled away in the second half, as you'd expect. And then Sunday at Colorado, the Buffs came out, hit a few... I'm going to say lucky shots early, some threes that they shouldn't have made, and the Huskies got behind and never really had a prayer of getting back into it. But it was probably, it was interesting. Their best performance, I think, of the season was against Colorado here at home, mm-hmm. and that was probably their worst performance of the season against Colorado on the road.
I mean, I don't know if it necessarily had to do with the altitude.
It's always a factor. I mean, Colorado traditionally has one of the largest differentials between their home play and their road play of any team in college basketball.
It's been a real demoralizing stretch, though.
It's not really building a lot of energy.
When you look back at what Husky basketball looked like 2 weeks ago, okay, it looked like they were probably going to beat Wazoo, which they didn't. It looked like they had a chance of taking one of these two, which they didn't, and now they're in a 3-game slide, and are they 5-5 in conference?
5-6 in conference. Five,
so they're under 500 in conference. You were looking at a situation a few weeks ago where it was like they were third in the conference. They have good young players. Nigel Williams-Goss was coming off the best game that he played. He really hasn't played very well in the last 3 games. He's kind of faded into obscurity.
I don't know about obscurity, but he's struggled. He's looked like a freshman.
Yeah. And the whole climate of Husky basketball feels so different right now than it did then, and it doesn't feel good.
I mean, it was kind of inevitable. The Huskies were not playing as well as their record indicated when they were 5-3 in conference. But the other aspect of it is now they've played 4 home games and 7 road games, and that's very difficult in the Pac-12. They're 1-6 on the road, 4-0 at home. So you hope that maybe things even out, but it's going to be very difficult to beat Stanford and Cal at home this weekend.
I mean, this whole season is definitely a win if you finish over 500 in conference.
Oh, huge win. If they get to 500, it's borderline miraculous.
Okay. And so this weekend playing Stanford and Cal.
Yeah, you basically have to win at least one of those games to keep that hope alive, and possibly both of them, I would say.
Of finishing 500?
Yeah.
I mean, considering the fact that you've already lost at Wazoo, you already lost your easiest road conference game.
Yeah, and at this point, Oregon State's a better team than UW, so that's an unlikely road win.
But they have 4 in a row coming up at home. You want to talk about Stanford first, coming up on Wednesday?
They don't have 4 in a row at home.
Or they have, well, the 2 coming up at home. Stanford coming up on Wednesday.
So Stanford, the difficulty thing about this is not only that both Stanford and Cal are pretty good teams, and everyone recognizes it with Cal, it's a little more difficult with Stanford because they have a history of losing close games. They don't have, you know, the recent NCAA tournament appearances that Cal does, but they are a pretty good team, and I think the season is starting to reflect it. They're 6-4 in conference, tied for 5th with Cal, and you know, looking likely to make the NCAA tournament. But the thing these two teams share in common is huge front lines. Stanford has Dwight Powell, who's one of the conference's better front court players. Cal has its combination of Richard Solomon and David Kravish that just decimated the Husky front court down at Berkeley a few weeks ago and when what was previously their worst performance of the conference season before the Colorado game. So they're two very difficult matchups for an undersized Husky team. Lorenzo Romo tried to get more size in the lineup last week by starting Desmond Simmons, who actually responded and played pretty well, but still, he's not as big as Solomon. You're still going to face mismatches. So,
playing against big teams is the worst possible thing that the Huskies can do.
Absolutely, and they have had some scuffs at times. They did match up pretty well with Arizona down in Tucson, but in general, it's going to be very difficult.
Chances of victory against Stanford?
I would say it's somewhere around 40%. For both of these games.
Really?
About 35 to 40%. Well, yeah, 40% maybe.
I mean, Cal seems like a harder game to me. To really put it in perspective of how terrible...
But they're even in the conference, and now Stanford has actually a half-game lead
really?
In terms of overall record. Cal has slumped a bit.
Cal just kind of has that perspective of being a better team.
Exactly.
From the outside. But to put it in perspective of how hopeless it feels... before the Wazoo game, I was talking about maybe going to one of or both of these games, which would be the first Husky basketball game that I'd attended in 3 years. It would have been a long time.
And fan support.
Now my interest in going is so low. You know, it just feels hopeless. It's not fun to be there, fun to watch them.
Well, if they could beat Stanford on Wednesday, would you then be excited about Cal on Saturday?
I will go to the Cal game if they beat Stanford.
All right, well, that's a bold thing. So I'd say about a 15% chance of sweeping this weekend. Obviously an unlikely scenario. About a 35% chance of getting swept, and probably somewhere around 50-50 of winning one of these two games.
I think that they at least need to win one.
Oh,
I think that they will win one game. They played pretty well through certain stretches against Colorado. It just kind of felt like that game got out of control early. I thought that they fought back pretty well. Andrew Andrews looked pretty good in that game to me. And when you're playing where CJ Wilcox can't hit shots, there's nothing you can do.
And he looked really fatigued. That's a concern going forward that we've seen over the last couple of years where his shooting percentages have dropped over the course of the Pac-12 season. So hopefully, you know, he can get it was just a matter of altitude and he'll be okay back at home.
I would definitely assume that that's the case. I don't think that'll be fatigued here. But if Wilcox is not hitting shots, they're not going to win either one of these games.
Oh, absolutely.
If he is hitting shots, they could potentially win both. That's what it's really going to come down to.
The other thing they need is the home crowd to be a factor. Like, hopefully...
So I shouldn't say that I'm not going
to
go.
Hopefully the rest of Husky fans are not quite as demoralized as you, although if I... The people who respond to me on Twitter are any indication, I do think they are.
What are they saying on Twitter?
You got to put it aside... Well, they're asking a lot of questions about Lorenzo Romar. I constantly get that. But
about whether Lorenzo Romar's job security?
Lorenzo Romar, coach for life, in my book.
Yeah, I would not be too concerned about Lorenzo Romar's job security at this point.
I'm a little bit concerned, but not too concerned. But I think the thing is, you've got to put that aside and put any cynicism or pessimism or doubt aside and just cheer for your team. I mean, that's what we saw with the Seahawks, and it's such a powerful force when there isn't that negativity in the stands.
I really don't think that's a comparable comparison there. You're comparing the team that just went to the Super Bowl to a team that's 5-6 in the Pac-12.
But there's
lost
a mentality. But even when the Seahawks were not good, even in the first year of the Pete Carroll era, there was a mentality that at home with the 12th man behind us, we can beat anyone.
It's true. I mean, that mentality has not really spread to other sports. Aside, it definitely is there in football. Husky football still probably has the mentality. I don't know if it actually happens, but the louder than a jet taking off perspective, Husky Stadium still exists, and we still talk about it.
And I mean, Sounders games, obviously the crowd is a huge part of it, even the Storm and the WNBA. I mean, so it doesn't necessarily have to be...
We're just quiet basketball fans.
I mean, the Dog Pack was considered, you know, really formidable a few years ago, but obviously with the night games, reducing attendance, and the team not being as good, it has waned in recent years. I think Husky fans have gotten spoiled, quite frankly.
Well, I think there'll be a lot of energy for both of these games. The game on Wednesday is at 6 o'clock. It's not a night game. I think that students are going to be really up for it, and playing Stanford is always a big game. We always like to beat Stanford.
And in any sport, regardless of the context, it's always fun to beat Stanford.
So I'm going to say I think that they'll win that game and lose against Cal.
That would be a
decent
result.
With me in attendance.
There you go.
Anything else on Husky basketball?
Don't think so.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to a shorter version of the Fabulous Pelton cast. You have to get down to Portland, so you've hurried us.
Exactly, and we'll have a little bit more time to talk next week.
About Al's shenanigans at All-Star.
Thanks for listening.